Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 13 of the college fantasy football season is here, and we are in the semifinals for each and every single one of your CFF leagues. Every lineup decision matters now more than ever, so we'll be giving you guys a couple of players at each of the main positions that we are comfortable starting, a couple of whom who have been big point scorers for you guys that we will be sitting this week, and then we will be finishing up with some of your fan-submitted start sit questions. We've got all of that and more coming right after this.
Look at Ginty go. Breaks a tackle. He's 10. He's touchdown. Burton's going to throw the deep ball. And Burton passed the defense. Touchdown, Luther Burton.
Milroe going to run it again. Got a lane. Kicked in the turbo. Milroe. Goodbye. Touchdown, Bama.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Wednesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we are doing here, head on over to campuscanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our extraordinary tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devi, C2C, betting needs, DFS needs, all of that. Whether that's articles, rankings, projections, tools, and even more than that. You can also find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And the handsome fellow joining me, as always, for these start-sit shows during the season is Mr. Justin Leo, a.k.a. Volume Pigs, at Volume Pigs on Twitter and Blue Sky. You can check out all of his awesome content over at volumepigs.com. Justin, welcome back to the show, man. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. It feels good to be back yet again. I mean, I know we're in crunch time here. This is the playoff period for pretty much all the leagues in CFF, right? So we're doing important work today. Looking forward to some challenging questions.
Dude, this is imposter syndrome season for me as a CFF analyst, man. This is like when I'm looking at all my leagues, I'm looking at my own start sit decisions, and all of a sudden I start questioning everything, man. Of like, oh man, like I don't know what do I actually know what I'm doing when I make these decisions? Because like right now I feel like this could go either way. You just got to remember at the end of the day, there's definitely skill involved in this game, but also, man, when you get to just the last 2 weeks of the season, sometimes every player that you're starting more than likely has been a stud at some point during the season, especially if you have your full roster available to you. Like, you don't have any guys on Oregon, Memphis, Hawaii, New Mexico, those guys, right? They're on bye this week. If you got your full roster this week and you start your studs, man, I don't blame you. Sometimes you just get guys that bust at the wrong time, and that is enough to kill your season. It is not a reflection on you as a player. It is just a luck of the draw thing sometimes. So something just everybody remember out there. Again, final 2 weeks of the season, every decision, like I said in the intro, every decision feels like it has just that much more weight to it, considering that, you know, actual, you know, titles are on the line at this point. But, you know, just a quick reminder for everybody out there. But yeah, we got to, like I said, we're week 13. It's actually kind of funny. I kind of realized this, that in a normal year, this would be the last week of the CFF season, but no, we get an extra bonus week this year. But like,
yeah,
I said, we
that's
got
right, yeah.
But we got an awesome show ahead for you guys today. Justin and I, as always, got our starts and sits, some guys that are outside the top 60 this point in the season we're starting, some guys inside the top 40 that we are sitting to this point. And then obviously you guys did an awesome job with your questions this week. First of all, everybody who submitted a question, congratulations to each and every one of you, because if you're submitting a question this week, that means that you are in the semifinals for your league. So hopefully that means, or you are doing that because you have listened to this show so well. And if you are, make sure you tell all of your friends to come and listen to the show. I know you guys sometimes want to keep us in your own little pockets and you don't want to tell all your friends about your secret knowledge stash that you get from the show. But if y'all could, after the season, especially if you win your leagues, just give us a shout out to the rest of your buddies in your league. So with that being said, Justin, I think Yeah, we can get started with the show. But before we get there, if you guys have not already, make sure you show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, a subscribe. If you're on the YouTube side of things, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show. Again, not only does this show us support, but you're also showing the game of college fantasy football in general some support. So we do our part. Y'all do y'all's part, especially since it is free. So Justin, let's get started on this. Let's head over to our starts for week 13. And we will start with your quarterback for this week. Justin, who are you starting outside the top 60 at quarterbacks?
Yeah. So, I mean, this should be a familiar name to a lot of people. Was a guy who had a lot of hype actually coming into last season when he played at Tulsa. So Marshall quarterback Braylon Braxton, he was a guy who finished 2022 with some pretty notable performances with Tulsa. Didn't go the way people hoped in 2023 under Kelvin Wilson, transferred this offseason, landed at Marshall. There was sort of some back and forth with the quarterback battle there. We weren't even really sure if Braxton was going to play this year. But then has kind of been inserted into the lineup later in the season, sort of got his shot. And he's done an okay job. Certainly he is a dual threat sort of runner. I mean, he's had like double digit rushing attempts in each of his starts so far. He has yet to like really have that huge notable performance though. Mm-hmm. But, when we're talking about quarterbacks outside the top 60, that's typically a theme. So, that's kind of fundamental to the question, right? You're taking players that haven't been that productive yet, but who have a chance at having a productive day this weekend. And I think that is the case because the matchup is against Old Dominion's. Marshall is playing Old Dominion this weekend. Marshall, statistically, again, you can always sort of look at various different statistics and tell a different story. But statistically, in terms of passing yards against Old Dominion, ranks pretty poorly outside the top 100 in the FBS right now. And this is a game where, the total, it's nothing spectacular. It's not bad either. It's set at 52.5 with ODU favored by, a point or two. So should be a close game. Assuming Braxton, this is sort of the risk, is that, with Marshall, they do still have Stone Earl there. He's always liable to come in for some snaps as well. But Braxton's sort of been the guy who's been leading the charge there lately. I assume that'll be the case again this weekend. So, this is a guy who has an intriguing skill set, team that's not great against the pass, really a team that's not that fantastic defensively either way. And so, this is a name who intrigues me this weekend.
I think it's a very safe play. I like you said, he hasn't done anything super fantastic so far this year. Hasn't really had that big breakout game. Now, if he's going to have one, I think going up against Old Dominion this weekend could provide him a chance to do so. But I think this is more definitely a guy that if you're looking at, you're in a deep, maybe in a deeper league, and you're losing Dylan Gabriel this week, you're losing Seth Hennigan, maybe you're losing Devin Dampier, this is a very good stopgap. I think you can pretty much lock in 22 to 24 points out of Braylon Braxton this week with a bonus. Maybe he goes over if he runs in two touchdowns rather than just a typical 0-1 or something like that. I like the call out here. I'll go ahead and throw out my guy here. This is a guy I have relied on in previous weeks as well. So not to sound too much like a broken record here, but Spencer Petras, quarterback out of Utah State, I'm throwing him out here again. He has a very, very nice matchup against San Diego State this weekend, whose defense is just getting worse and worse by the week. They're currently ranked 75th in the country, according to our numbers at C2C Winning Edge, defending the pass, which is worse than it was 2 weeks ago, which is worse than it was 2 weeks before that. So given the fact that these rankings are kind of an amalgamation of what's happened in the season, that 75th number doesn't actually represent like just how bad in recent games San Diego State's secondary has been. Petras has been on a bit of a slide recently, pretty much ever since Jalen Royals injured himself, opted out of the rest of the season. Whatever you want to say, Petras has very much quickly gone from, a 25, 30 point quarterback for CFF down to a 15 to 20 point quarterback. But I will also say that the stretch that Utah State has been on over the last 3 weeks, yes, they've been without Royals, and I do think that hurts them a bit, but it's also one of the tougher stretches Mountain West-wise or defensively they have faced in the Mountain West. Between Wyoming, Washington State, and Hawaii, like all three of those teams are teams that are pretty decent against the pass defensively. So you get Petras going up against San Diego State here, a high over-under game, 61.5. Utah State favored by 4 points here, so they're expected to be able to put up some points in this game. Rahul Faison is obviously a major concern here, that he scores a ton of touchdowns for the Aggies, but given the fact that, you know, there's probably some touchdown regression coming for Faison potentially here in the next week or two, Petras could benefit greatly from that. I could see a 3-touchdown day from Petras pretty easily here against San Diego State, and that'll be more than enough for him to be a serviceable quarterback for you this weekend. Again, his major fault again in previous weeks, like in previous weeks, is the fact that he has no rushing ability. So his ceiling's kind of capped on that front.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good pick. I don't really have too much to add there. It's a good matchup. We'll fingers crossed that Petras gets back to form this weekend. Definitely, it's a good opportunity too. So
they really need another wide receiver there to really step up. Like between Otto Tia, between Kyrese White, between Jack Astera, and because there's one more that kind of stepped up, but like nobody's really kind of broken into that superstar level that Jalen Royals was. And I don't think we can really expect any of them to do that, but if there's a time to do so, it would be great if it was this weekend.
Exactly. So
you're running back, Justin, who do you got at running back you're starting this week?
Sure. So this may be maybe a surprise. Devon Booth, Mississippi State running back. They're playing Missouri this weekend. And Missouri typically, or this year, statistically, their rushing yards again suggest that they're pretty good against the run. However, I sort of dig back and look at some of their previous games, and I look at Le'Veon Moss for Texas A&M, who was averaging like 10 yards per carry, went over 100 and scored. I look at Raheem Sanders last weekend, albeit he scored via the air, but I mean, Devon Booth, he had like a 3-game receiving score streak back in October. We know that, is part of his profile. I look at Justice Haynes with Alabama. He didn't really get too many touches, but, he had some good rushing success there as well. So, I mentioned earlier, when you're looking at these statistics, obviously it's a good starting point, but they, don't always tell the whole story, and sometimes you can kind of dig in there and look at other comparables and sort of make the decision based off that. And certainly, Mississippi State, are they sort of the caliber of Texas A&M or Alabama? Could that affect things here? Certainly, Mississippi State's more of a lower end SEC team, and certainly they could get pushed around. But, Devon Booth actually has been pretty consistent for them since sort of emerging, I want to say, about a month ago. And, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know too much about Missouri. I mean, when they've played sort of other SEC teams with good running backs, those backs have statistically, from a CFF production standpoint, at least had good days. Again, I know Raheem Sanders scored on the receiving score, not the rushing score. If you look at his yards per carry last weekend, it wasn't pretty. But at the end of the day, he still had a good day. So maybe I'm playing with fire there a little bit, but I like Devon Booth's usage. I don't know that I'm fully sort of scared enough away from Missouri to shy away from this pick. Devon Booth is another one that's intriguing to me this weekend.
So you kind of pointed out that if you actually I could look at Missouri's rushing defensive rating here, which according to CDC Winning Edge is 22nd. In the country versus the run here, and that could be enough to turn me off to considering starting Devon Booth here. And I do think there's some worry to be had here, right?
Yeah.
But again, you already pointed out, if you go and actually look at the performance of running backs against Mizzou in recent games, they have had success. The other thing I'll point out here is that on the opposite side, if you go and look at Devon Booth's stats over the last couple of games, he's done pretty dang well against some SEC D lines that have been really good at stopping the run. Like Arkansas, we all know their secondary is garbage, but they've been really good at stopping the run this year. Not when Devon Booth was out there, 17 carries, 93 yards, and a touchdown through the air there. You had Booth do well Tennessee. Against Texas A&M, 12 carries, 79 yards. You just said it, right? Probably the most impressive one on this list is Booth going 20 for 125 and a touchdown versus Tennessee. Tennessee's supposed to have one of the best D lines in the entire country.
Yeah.
Right? So that is what's more encouraging to me than anything else. I will say one thing I'm slightly worried about is, again, not Mississippi State being in quit mode per se, but, like, let's see, what's their record right now? They got to have seven losses at least at this point.
At least, yeah. I think
Really playing much for anything. Yeah, or yeah, they're 2-8. They're not really playing for much at this point. So it's like, how much are they willing to, you know, try to ride Booth into the ground, rely on him that much? If they do think he's going to be a big part of their team next year, which I'm speaking out of my butt right now, Booth could be out of eligibility after this year for all I know. But even still, right? Like, I think that. That is definitely encouraging. I think there's a definitive path for Booth to emerge here. And again, we're talking about running backs outside the top 60. Everybody outside the top 60 is going to have warts. You might as well go for a guy that, you know, pretty consistently has been getting production. You know, 93 yards, 76 yards, 125 yards over his last three games against all levels of defenses.
Yeah, why not?
Just hope he finds the end zone at one point. Really is all you're kind of hoping for here.
Exactly.
So, wide receivers, though. Oh, wait, nope. I'm not going to do the same thing I did last week. I'm going to jump over
literally
to my running back.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a guy that I'm actually kind of shocked is outside the top 60 in running backs. I have no clue how he's down here.
Yeah.
But I'll go Tarius Stewart, running back out of Bowling Green. He's been on an absolute tear recently. Probably the thing that's holding him back is that he hasn't scored a ton of touchdowns this year. But in terms of just raw production, right, 25 carries, 124 yards versus Kent State, 21 for 99 against Toledo, 20 for 117 versus Central Michigan, 15 for 150 versus Western Michigan. You might be telling me, well, Jared, three out of those four teams you mentioned there, Kent State, Central Michigan, Western Michigan, those are all dookie defenses in the MAC there. Am I supposed to be impressed by that? I'm like, no. But guess what? Tarius Stewart's facing Ball State this weekend, who is bottom five in the country in defending the run. In addition, this is expected to be a relatively high scoring game for a MAC matchup this year. You know, 57.5 is the total here. Bowling Green favored by 12. That's a really good spread, in my opinion, to grab running backs for, because you're not talking about such a blowout that you're fearing that, you know, he'll be taken out of the game relatively early. But it's a lead, you know, about a two touchdown lead. That's usually when teams start kind of grinding out in the second half of a game, right? Where they know they've got the game won. All they need is that clock to run. You hand it off to your stud running back here. You've been given 15, 20 plus touches every single game. I think Stewart's in for another big weekend versus Ball State. Again, I have no clue how he's outside the top 60.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Is it just because maybe he was injured? Maybe in some earlier games?
That's true. I did forget about that.
Yeah, that's probably why. Because generally when he's playing, he's pretty productive and they give him a lot of touches. And another thing about Ball State is
he did miss two games.
Okay, so that's probably has something to do with it. And so, yeah, as I was saying, Ball State, obviously you mentioned a good matchup, sort of at least statistically. You know, another factor is they're you know, head coachless at the moment, right? They have an interim coach. So, you know, and then I don't know. I don't want to make too much of that because that can go either way. You can make an argument where they're going to be fired up with the interim coach or they're going to be a mess with the interim coach. But it's just another thing to keep in mind. I like the pick. You know, it seems almost, I don't want to use the word cheesy, but it's sort of like my Caden Hauser pick last week, who ended up actually disappointing, but sort of a player who probably shouldn't be outside the top 60, but is due to, I guess, lack of games. So, but I like the idea nonetheless.
I'll be real. I completely missed the fact that Ball State fired their head coach. So that's news to me.
Oh, really? Okay. Well,
like, I just completely missed that one. I was so concerned about watching FAU to see if we would have the Quartet of Owl teams have a head coach opening. Guess I completely missed the Cardinals.
Well, there's been quite a few coaching changes over the past few days. I don't think anybody can blame you.
I can't wait until coaching carousel season. I'm lying. I need a break.
Don't we all? Yeah.
Wide receivers, Justin, what are you looking at here for your start?
Yeah, well, I'm pleased to be speaking about this player once again, because we spoke about him quite a bit last season, specifically in the month of September. And that is one, will Mr. September, wait a minute, no, he's changed his name now to Mr. November Shepherd. Will Shepherd, wide receiver from Colorado, formerly of Vanderbilt. Those who were watching last year will remember, the thing with Shepherd, usually with Vanderbilt players, but the thing with Shepherd in particular, he was lighting off 20-point games pretty much all September, and then as soon as October hit, production dips. This year is kind of like a little different. They've only played two games in November, but he scored 20 points, or at least around that, depending on the format that you play in. In both of those games, he scored a touchdown in both of those games, one versus Texas Tech, two versus Utah. And they're playing a Kansas team this weekend, which, defensively in either category that you look at, they're not really, they're bottom third in the FBS. And this is a game with a total set at 59.5. Colorado's favored by 2.5 points. I'd expect Colorado to score some points here. The problem is they have multiple receivers. Lejounte Wester is also really involved. Obviously, Travis Hunter's, when he's playing receiver, involved. And they've even got other names, right? So I think Jimmy Horn might be dealing with an injury currently. I don't know if he's playing this weekend. But there's other guys there too, like Draylon Miller and stuff like that. But Shepherd's definitely seems to have carved a role out for himself, at least in his last couple games. Granted, we look 1 week back from those two games when they played Cincinnati, and it's one reception on two targets. So the floor is certainly quite low. But I just thought it would be fun to sort of mention Will Shepherd, who's doing well in November now. For the first time in his career, really must be sort of an interesting feeling for him. And yeah, I mean, we're looking at receivers outside the top 60. And again, this is a player who, we know he's good. He was good at Vanderbilt and he's in a crowded room at Colorado. But, I think you could do worse by sort of taking a piece that Colorado passing attack this weekend.
Remind me to ask Chris K to throw some money on Colorado minus 2.5 this weekend. That
You
way,
like that line?
I'm kind of shocked that it's that low. And then I kind of think to myself, well, I'm rooting for Colorado to lose, but if they win, they're going to win by more than 3 points. So might as well throw some money on that. That way, if I have to deal with the fact that Colorado wins another game, I at least can get some money back for it. So.
Oh, that Jared, known Colorado hater.
Jared, known Colorado hater, and is betting money in order to still have a way to win, even when he is miserable about the
Gotta
fact that
hedge,
Colorado
gotta
continues to
hedge
win.
it.
In terms of Will Shepard here, like I like you going after the streak player here, right? Again, two great weeks in a row here. We know Colorado is going to rely on these outside wide receivers. They're big time reliant on them last year with Xavier Weaver. Will Shepard's honestly a better receiver than him. He's had better games before this point, this stretch here. I do think that if Colorado is going to get to where they want to be, they got to continue to involve Will Shepard. Do I expect another two touchdown game this weekend? Probably not. I think you get a little bit lucky there last week, but in terms of this being a defense they can absolutely take advantage of, higher scoring game, nothing to argue about from me here. So.
Yeah, I'm looking at his last, like he scored six touchdowns in his last six games. So,
There you go. There you
he's
go.
finding
Very, very much
the
carved out a role for himself.
end zone.
So my wide receiver I'm throwing out this weekend is one Mr. Anthony Smith, the wide receiver out of East Carolina, a guy that's definitely emerged down the stretch for the Pirates here. They very much have a clear top three wide receiver rotation for their team between him, Winston Wright, and Chase Sewell. But we did see Chase Sewell go down with an injury this past week, a hamstring injury, no less. And if you know anything, hamstring and back injuries are two things that you really don't love to take chances on. And so I personally would be surprised to see Chase Sewell back at least in full form this upcoming week against North Texas. Speaking of North Texas, Anthony Smith, now a clear top two wide receiver with Sewell down potentially here, going up against probably the best matchup that East Carolina gets all year here, going up against North Texas, who's bottom five against the pass in the country, bottom everything defensively. It feels like Vegas agrees that the scoring potential in this game is phenomenal. North Texas is favored by 3 points in this game. The total is 73 and a half, like which is easily one of the highest over-unders we've gotten this year. I don't know, man. Smith being the deep threat on an offense going up against a completely porous secondary, I'm expecting at least one to two explosive touchdowns in this game. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, this is one I really love. And I could have used a huge performance from Anthony Stiff last weekend when I was in Nate's playoff. But nonetheless, I do like the player. Have watched some ECU because I had a share of his. And assuming Caden Hauser has a nice bounce back this weekend, which again, that seems reasonable. He was doing pretty well for a few weeks, had a down performance last weekend, or
At
last
the
week. I think
worst
they played him
time.
at Yeah, tough time. I'm sure he lost a couple of people playoff weeks, unfortunately, and that's how it goes. But this looks like a great bounce back opportunity. You mentioned it, huge over under set by Vegas. So, again, and with Sewell out or expected to be out, that's would assume even more targets coming his way. I think of all the picks for this week's start segment, I think this is the one I like the most.
All righty, let's move on to some negatives here. Let's head on over to our sits for this week. Again, reminding everybody, these are players that are top 40 at their respective positions. And Justin, you got some names here that I kind of find very interesting. Not that I disagree with per se, but just names I didn't really consider. But I'll throw out one of my names here first because I let you go first last time. So it's my turn to go first, Justin.
Go ahead, ladies first, Jared.
Oh man, that got turned around on me real quick. Now I'm going to go Bryson Daly here, quarterback out of Army. Obviously, he was injured for a bit there, came back versus North Texas. Still wasn't looking quite 100%. Obviously, 32, 36 rushing attempts, like clearly they felt decently comfortable with him. But even against that North Texas defense, you would have expected him to have one of his better performances of the year. It's actually one of his weaker ones in recent memory, right? He scored 45 points versus UAB. 56 points versus ECU. I guess he was just due for a quote unquote down game at some point. 27 points being your down game just shows you how crazy of a year Daly's had. But even still, that kind of told me he wasn't fully back. He does get the bye, so that helps on the health side of things. But then we get this matchup this weekend against Notre Dame. Notre Dame's seventh overall in overall defense, according to our numbers at C2C Winning Edge. They're 21st against the run. This is a low over under game here, 45 and a half. Notre Dame's favored by 14 and a half. So you're looking at a team total for Army around the 14, 15 point range. So two touchdowns maybe for the Black Knights this weekend. Great. I Army's a good enough team that they could go over that, but it's not something I'm willing to bet on in a playoff game. I know people love Daly. I know that you'd love nothing more than to start him, believing in him this weekend and for him to carry you through this weekend. I'm just saying, I think you have to look for other options for sure this weekend. I'm not willing to trust Daly in a playoff format here. Justin, what do you think?
Yeah, well, just take a look at what happened with Blake Horvath and Navy a few weeks ago when they played Notre Dame, right? I mean, yeah, different teams and maybe Daly is a better, certainly a better runner than Horvath. But, I mean, that game was ugly and it really actually broke Horvath for the season. He hasn't been the same since, really. I mean, he hasn't had a good game in CFF since that game. And so I don't know. I mean, if this goes anything like that Navy game, it seems like Daly could be in for a tough day. He's been better, I guess, on the season than Horvath, so I'm going to give him a little bit more benefit of the doubt still. But I don't know. I mean, I think Army's even more one-dimensional than Navy, whereas Horvath had a little bit more passing ability that they could sort of shake it up. I think Army's a little bit more, even more so, sort of typical Service Academy run-heavy approach. And so I don't know that that's going to work well with a team that has, like Notre Dame that has the quality of athletes that they have. They sort of proved that against Navy that they can really sort of shut that sort of style of offense down. So I think this is a major sort of risk, this in terms of Daly playing this week. I understand people who want to just fire him up anyways, and depending on what options you have, I guess you do you. But certainly I would agree that this is one where that data point with Navy a few weeks ago would really stick out to me and would make it hard to stomach, I think, starting Daly, not confidently at least.
I have nothing to disagree with you on there. What about your quarterback for this week, Justin? Who are you sitting?
Yeah, well, I have a couple of hotter takes, I think, at running back and wide receiver. I don't know that this one is really all that spicy. I mean, Sorsby has been up and down. Brendan Sorsby, Iowa State quarterback, for those listening, is my
Cincinnati
pick.
quarterback.
Cincinnati. If he's playing, is he playing? No, he's playing Kansas
He played
State,
Iowa
isn't
State
he?
last week.
That's why I'm thinking of Iowa State. I'm like, okay, no, Cincinnati quarterback Brendan Sorensen. He's been up and down all season. I know I had him in one of my leagues, and when he was playing sort of weaker teams, things were good. He's definitely a dual threat runner. When they're playing sort of tougher teams, though, he's pretty cold. I don't know that this is the week. Again, I'll have to sort of go back to the show sheet here, jog my memory who they're playing, but I don't remember it being, oh
They are
yeah,
playing
KSU.
Kansas State.
Yeah, so like Kansas State, I know like statistically, like against the pass, it says they're not that great rushing wise. It says they're pretty stingy against the run. I don't know. With Sorsby, it just seems like if they're not playing sort of a definitively lower sort of talented team compared to Cincinnati, it's hard to sort of want to fire him up. Whenever they play sort of other equal competition or better, he's not quite as potent. I do like his sort of usage. I do like him as a player, but I don't know that this is a game where I want to fire him up. But it depends on what options you have available, who's on bye and et cetera, et cetera. So, would I be super opposed to starting him? No. Would I, feel good about starting him? No, not really.
I think the thing that I'm kind of more worried about with Sorsby than anything else is that he has been atrocious in the turnover column the last couple of weeks here. He has had, count them, four turnovers in his last two games here, which actually doesn't sound that bad, but that's only because I have Carson Beck as my quarterback for my dogs. But regardless, right, like Cincinnati's going to kind of getting to the end of the season here. The thing that would be most worrying to me is starting Sorsby and him having another multi-turnover game here against Kansas State, and Satterfield just deciding to pull the plug on him and trying to see what they have in Leichenberg or whoever else they have on that roster. Because again, you're towards the end of the season just to see, like, all right, let's see if one of our younger guys can kind of give us a spark going into the offseason here. Again, Kansas State's defense is very hard to kind of figure out here, right? You kind of mentioned it. Their passing defense is horrendous outside top 100, but their rushing defense is top 15. So it's like very difficult to tell, like, okay, well, Sorsby's a running quarterback, so you probably won't be able to rely on, 50 plus yards rushing in this game, but he's not a great passer. So I'm kind of leaning with you towards this is probably one of his weaker games. But also, like, part of what makes Sorsby appealing is that he's relatively consistent just in general, right? Like, you can basically pencil him in for somewhere between 20 and 30 fantasy points. So if that's all you're looking for with Sorsby this weekend, sure, start him. But if you're looking for a guy that'll probably get you, 30 plus, look elsewhere. All right, running backs. I am going to be sitting Mr. Jarquez Hunter, running back out of Auburn this weekend. This is a guy that, one, I do think he's boosted into the top 40 because of this awesome performance against Kentucky here, almost 300 yards, two touchdowns in that game. But even still, right, like when Auburn's offense is working, Hunter is at the center of it, right? They cannot rely on Peyton Thorne. They cannot rely on any of those quarterbacks they have on roster there. So when Hunter's going, the Tigers are happy. Here's the thing. Everybody and their mother in the SEC knows that. If you're facing Auburn, you shut down the run, you force Peyton Thorne to beat you, you have a much better shot at winning here, right? And so we are looking at Auburn facing Texas A&M this weekend, who's top 20 against the rush. This is expected to be a kind of defensive battle here, 46 and a half over under. Texas A&M only favored by 2.5. So that, Vegas is thinking that Auburn scores in this game somewhat, but my deal is that Texas A&M absolutely has the talent on this defense to key in on Hunter and then force Thorne to win the game for Auburn. And whenever that's the case, Hunter has shown to not exactly have the best of days for CFF purposes, so I will be sitting him. Justin, do you have any thoughts against that?
Yeah, I mean, Hunter is such a hot and cold player. But one thing I guess I would say in terms of devil's advocate is I wonder if this will be a look-ahead game for A&M with Texas next week. Like maybe they could get caught with their pants down in this one. But I don't know. Is that enough to want to fire up Hunter? Given what I what I mentioned earlier about how hot and cold he is, just in general, that alone kind of makes it difficult to trust them if it's a must start, must win week, which I guess it is if you're in the playoffs. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm with you on Hunter. Certainly from a matchup perspective, I think A&M sort of, defensively, it's going to pose some problems. And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, outside of that game against Kentucky, where have we really seen Hunter have a great day, right? I mean, he had a massive day against Kentucky, but he's closer to 10 points usually than 20 points. So I don't know. I mean, if you need only sort of 10, 15 points, maybe talk yourself into it. But if you're needing more than that, I don't know that Hunter is the player I'd reach for.
All right, who are you sitting at running back?
Yeah, well, speaking of guys who end up with 10 points, seemingly more often than not, Damian Martinez, Miami running back, right? New place, same problem kind of thing. I mean, he was at Oregon State before, and sort of the thing with him was he would get the ball between the 20s, but then would always get taken out of the game around the red zone. That's not necessarily the case at Miami, but for whatever reason, I guess he's just sort of splitting touches with other running backs there. And Cameron Ward scoring a lot of passing touchdowns. Damian Martinez, not really like a, an extremely productive running back, has been pretty sort of, I don't know, lukewarm, I'd say, this year, similar to Hunter. I mean, he's got a couple of good performances, but overall, I mean, he's a guy that you trust to get you 10 points. I don't know that you really ever expect him to get 20. You're happy when he does it, but don't know that that's really what I expect. But I don't know. I mean, there's another way I could look at it and say, well, Miami, they have something to play for this weekend. They're playing Wake Forest, which, is a game that where there's expected to be points. But I wonder, is it not just going to be Cameron Ward who scores basically all the passing touchdowns? And then at running back, like I said, they do cycle in different runners in there. So it's not a given that just because they score a rushing touchdown, that it'll be Martinez. So, I'm picking Martinez here, but there are not really that many options this week that stood out at running back also. So, this is not one that's like a slam dunk sit for me, but it's one where I'm kind of cold on him.
I'm shocked that Martinez is in the top 40 for running backs. Are we sure we double checked that? Because like you said, like he hasn't really had like a ton of great games here. Obviously, the game against Florida State was easily the best of the season there, almost 150 yards, two touchdowns. Very similar actually to Jarquez Hunter here. Like I said, where he's got mostly hanging around that 10-point range here. You split the backfield there between him and Fletcher. I will say, again, I think you touched on this, but like the Wake Forest matchup is pretty solid for Miami just overall. Again, Vegas certainly thinks so. Miami's favored by over 24 points in this game. Wake Forest's defense is, outside the top 100 against the pass, 90th versus the run, right? So there's a path for Martinez to rip off a couple of big plays in this game, and you just kind of call it a day, regardless of whether he gets 10 carries or 15 carries. But I also understand that, if you're in the playoffs for your league, right, you probably got better options out there than starting Martinez in this spot. So I don't blame you. I will say again, there's definitely a risk of him kind of going off in this game, ripping off some big ones.
Yeah,
So.
he definitely could. And he's currently ranked 47th from what I just checked on FanDraft. So he's a little outside of the top 40. But look, we had to pick somebody. Not a lot of names were standing out. So,
Okay, so Justin just admitted he cheated. That's fine.
hey, I mean, if you're not cheating, you're not trying to win, or however the saying goes. I don't know. Look, the options were slim this week. Had to choose someone. So.
Fair enough. Speaking of slim, man, wide receivers get tougher and tougher every week, it feels like, to pick some guys to sit because, again, we don't have a lot of great players this year for wide receiver, but we also don't have guys. But we also have a lot of good guys, right? Like guys that really, no matter what matchup they're in, you could see them going off. Like you could see them being productive, even if you don't love the matchup. But got to pick somebody. And for wide receiver this week, I'm going Kerryon Newton, the wide receiver out of Toledo here. Phenomenal mid-season stretch this guy had. Again, capping off with a 17 target, 9 reception, 164 yard, and 2 touchdown game against Bowling Green. A very solid MAC defense there. Problem is, he's kind of faded a little bit in the last couple of weeks here. Again, 9 targets versus Eastern Michigan, but only finished the game with 6 catches and 38 yards. Defense is really starting to kind of key in on him there. Then against Central Michigan, 6 targets, his lowest in quite a while. 3 receptions for 40 yards, no touchdowns. I like the idea of a bounce back, but Toledo's going up against Ohio this weekend, who just shut down Eastern Michigan for 10 points. Vegas certainly thinks that this will be a relatively defensive battle in the MAC here, over under a 44.5. Toledo only favored by 2 points, so both teams basically, you know, looking at about 3 touchdowns worth of points in this game. Do I think Newton has a decent shot at getting one of those touchdowns? Sure. I also can see Tucker Gleason running in 2 of them and then one of their other receivers catching, or Anthony Torres getting a touchdown on the goal line or something like that, right? I think that among the top 40 quarterbacks, I would say that Newton is the most likely to have a bust week. What do you think, Justin?
Honestly, I don't have too much to add here. I mean, I'm not really in any disagreement on, you know, I felt what you felt there is slim pickings at wide receiver this weekend. So, yeah, I think it's a good pick.
All right, who's your guy at wide receiver that you're sitting? I'll be real. This one I'm kind of surprised by, but I can also kind of see where you're coming from.
Yeah, well, let me explain. So Kyron Lacy, LSU receiver. And, you know, sometimes with these set questions, you kind of have to go out of the box a little bit in terms of your reasoning. And I have to say, I just don't like the mojo at LSU right now. I don't like the feeling. I don't like the sentiment. I don't like Kyron Lacy yelling at Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly, a proud coach, I don't think will take too kindly to that and is probably steaming on that all week. And I don't know that Lacey's going to be rewarded for that kind of behavior this weekend. Granted, it's a great matchup. You know, Vanderbilt's just good enough for LSU to take them seriously. And honestly, I mean, if LSU is not careful, they could take a loss here as well. We've seen Vanderbilt's a dangerous opponent. But I don't know. Lacey, the things have just broken down there. I'm not really, you know, Nussmeier is not playing particularly well. Lacey's very upset all the time. Brian Kelly's red in the face and upset all the time. It's just things are not going well. And I don't know that I really want to hitch my wagon to Lacey. You know, I just don't, you know, they've got really nothing to play for, I think, at this. I think their season's kind of over. They're not really beholden to Lacey anymore. So his antics, I imagine, are wearing people out. And whether or not that actually manifests itself in lower targets or not, probably, who knows? But I don't know. I just don't like the vibes right now at LSU, and I'd rather avoid this situation if I can.
I think the more damning piece of information for LSU more than anything is the fact that over the last 3 games, we've seen this offense score 23, 13, and 16 points.
Yikes.
Lacey, he can have himself some nice volume. He has himself some nice games. He's clearly a top target for LSU. But when your offense is struggling to hit 20 points in a single game over the last 2 weeks, that's definitely cause for concern. Now, Vegas certainly thinks that LSU will be able to bounce back a little bit this week offensively. They got the over-under here at 53.5. LSU favored by 7. So if you're doing the math at home, that basically puts LSU right around, you know, 4 touchdown range, so 27, 28 points, right? So definitely a better week than what they've had in the last couple. But I'm with you, man. Like, there's something off about LSU's team right now. Like, normally, yeah, LSU kind of starts the season off under Brian Kelly. They kind of start off a little rough, and they get better as the season goes on. Right now, we just ain't seeing that. So,
yeah, it's a lot of bad vibes from what I can tell, and who knows what's going on behind the scenes.
Alrighty. Let's go talk about some of these fan submitted start sit questions, man. Again, if you guys are out there, we are doing, I already said on the last waiver wire show that we are done with waiver wire shows for this year, but we are still going to have sit start questions next week for week 14. So if you get to your championship, you're listening to the show, and you frankly have not followed the at Chasing the Natty account and made sure you turn on those notifications so that you can get the start sit tweet as soon as I put it out to submit your questions, frankly, what are you doing? Go do that right now. That's where pretty much all of these questions come from. I do try to get in some YouTube comments every once in a while from guys who, sometimes you guys will post these questions a week in advance, and I appreciate it, but like, like, I appreciate the dedication, but like, it's pretty funny when I post a start sit show for week 12, and then immediately there's somebody in the comments being like, by the way, here's my start sit for week 13. Appreciate you guys planning ahead, but woof, you guys are nuts sometimes. Anyway, first question here. This one comes to us from Dan Feinbaum, which is a fantastic Twitter name, might I add. He is asking us to pick between three quarterbacks here. We are starting one of these three quarterbacks in a full PPR league. Granted, that doesn't really affect our quarterbacks here too much, but he's asking us to pick
catch a pass,
one. He's asking us to pick one of CJ Agbana, the quarterback out of Buffalo, or we can go Parker Navarro, quarterback out of Ohio, going up against Tulane, or we can go with Colton Joseph, the quarterback out of Old Dominion, going up against Marshall. So, Justin, I'm going to throw this one over to you first, man. Which one quarterback will you be starting of these three?
Well, I appreciate you emphasizing how many quarterbacks we're starting in this one, because I do typically forget. CJ Agbana, that's my answer. Coming off a good game, definitely has that dual threat ability. That dual threat ability really sort of makes his upside quite high, as is the case with dual threat runners. But also, this is a good matchup. He actually has two good matchups. So if you have CJ Agbana, or you don't, if he's on the wire and you're in the playoffs, think about getting a spot for him, because he plays Kent State next weekend as well. But as far as this week, Eastern Michigan, statistically, there's nothing really there to suggest that this is a matchup that warrants any sort of avoidance on our end. And Agbana has kind of really come on lately. I don't have his numbers right off the top. I know it's in the show sheet. Okay, here we go. Yeah, I mean, he's coming off two. I knew he was coming off at least one, but he's coming off two good games there. One against Ball State last weekend, another against Akron. Again, and sort of as Jared was mentioning earlier, these are not great teams within the MAC, but the good news is EMU and Kent State are sort of in that bracket as well. So, you can kind of sort of look at that and say, well, that's probably, you can expect something similar. Nothing's a guarantee, obviously, but, I think there's enough ingredients here where I like Agbana. I mean, I also like Colton Joseph. I could have started him as well. That there's not a huge difference for me between the two. Problem with Navarro is Toledo, I think, is pretty good on defense, if I remember correctly.
Pretty solid. It really came top 30 in pretty much all categories.
Yeah, so I mean, that is pretty solid. And so it kind of came down to Agbana and Joseph for me. I'm happy to start either, but I think I'll roll with Agbana on this question.
Alrighty. I think I'll start with my easy sit. I think the easy sit for me is Navarro. As you kind of mentioned, that defensive battle there. Navarro did great this past weekend against Eastern Michigan, right? Scoring four touchdowns on the ground, over 100 yards on the ground. Beautiful. Carried me in the FSGA league this past week, right? But
nice.
I'm sitting him this week. I don't like the defensive matchup there, especially when I got two other options here in CJ Agbana and Colton Joseph, who, in my opinion, between these two, between Colton Joseph and CJ Agbana, it's a coin flip for me. I really could go either way on both of these guys, right? Their totals in their Vegas games are very similar, 51.5 versus 52.5 for, Marshall Old Dominion. Both games are expected to be close here. Both Agbana and Joseph are solid on the ground, but there's also the possibility they don't do extremely well on the ground. Yeah. I think I'm gonna go with one just for difference of opinion here, but I think I'll lean towards Colton Joseph here. Again, it's by a smidge. I really think that Agbana or Colton Joseph will be very similar to each other, but when I look at my projections and C2C projections, both of them have Colton Joseph slightly ahead of Agbana. So like my projections, I have Joseph at 21 points versus Agbana at 19.6 points. I personally think both of them can score higher in their respective games, especially when, especially Marshall, right, where they, they're pretty susceptible on the ground, right? They're 98th in the country versus the run. Joseph is the more likely out of the two to have themselves a really nice day on the ground versus Agbana is going up against Eastern Michigan, whose defense isn't great, don't get me wrong, but they're 66th versus the run, so pretty much dead average among the FBS. So can Navarro still have a great day against that? Yes. But if you're going to ask me which one am I more likely to take advantage of, I'll probably go with Joseph here. As I kind of mentioned before, again, my projections have this being Colton Joseph barely ahead of CJ Agbana. My projections have Parker Navarro down at like 12 points. I don't think he scores that low, but I think it's a definitive sign to tell you just exactly how much better Toledo's defense is compared to the defenses that Navarro has faced at points this year. Right, and then our C2C projections actually have Navarro at the highest, and then Colton Joseph, and then CJ Agbana. So any more thoughts there, Justin?
No, I think you summarized it all pretty well.
All right, put our tokens back, and then we'll move on to our second question here. This one is another quarterback question. Comes to us from Dynasty Central Sports at DC Sports underscore YT on Twitter. And he is asking us to start one quarterback between Tyler Huff going up against Sam Houston State, East Caden Hauser out of East Carolina going up against North Texas, or we can go with Shador Sanders, quarterback out of Colorado, going up against Kansas. Mind you, this is a 6-point passing touchdown league and minus 2 points for interceptions. So the 6-point passing touchdowns makes this a little bit easier on the Tyler Huff front. I think I'm sitting Tyler Huff of these three yeah. options, right? Tyler Huff and Jacksonville State's offense has been great, very consistent over the last couple weeks, two 26-point performances in a row here. But Sam Houston's defense here is, top 15 in the country versus the pass. Their rushing is where they're more susceptible. And while Tyler Huff, don't get me wrong, obviously can do his damage on the ground as well, to me that screams that they're going to ride Trey Stewart in this game. And, Vegas got an over-under in this game of 55.5, Jacksonville State -6. That's actually a little bit lower than the kind of scores than we've been really expecting out of Jacksonville State here recently. So I'll sit Tyler Huff here. And then that leaves Shador Sanders going up against Kansas, or do I go Caden Hauser versus East Carolina? I think both in a 6-point passing touchdown league are excellent plays this week. I'm still going to go with Caden Hauser. Again, I can't get over that over-under there. That's 73.5, right? We saw Owen McCallum this past week do well against his North Texas defense, right? I have no doubt that Caden Hauser can bounce back from his relatively crappy performance last week versus Tulsa and get himself back on track versus North Texas. Because even if you look at what Hauser did last week, yeah, he threw 3 interceptions. That sucks. Don't get me wrong. He only threw 1 touchdown. But if you look at the bones of like his performance, 37 passing attempts, 314 yards, like all you need is a little bit better touchdown luck there. And you're able to, all you need is a little bit better touchdown luck there. And that's all you need for him to have another fantastic week like he did against Florida Atlantic and Temple. So Justin, what do you think, man?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't fault you for starting Hauser, and we talked about him earlier. Yeah, that over-under for that game, certainly it's very tempting. For me, though, I think I'm going to pick Shader Sanders in this one. I agree with you that the 6-point passing touchdown format makes it easier to sit Huff of the three names. In terms of the remaining two, it's a close one, obviously, and there's a lot to like on both ends. Shader has been pretty good for the duration of the total season. Hauser is a guy who, he sort of came in later as the starter for ECU, had some good games, had a downer last weekend, obviously. Expect him to bounce back. But Shader has been pretty consistent all year long. He's pretty good from week one till now. And they play Kansas, who, defensively, there's not really anything that sticks out there that says this needs to be avoided. This is a team that needs to be avoided either. They're over-under. It's not in the 70s, but, they've got an over-under of 59.5 total for the game, with Colorado favored at 2.5. So, I mean, the total over-under expected from Vegas for this game is nothing to slouch at either. So, but I, either way, I think I'd be happy starting either of these two players, in Hauser or Sanders, that is.
Yeah, I think both are great. Again, like I said, the thing I can't get over is that over under 73.5 for UNT and East Carolina there. Plus, again, just how horrific North Texas' secondary is, you know, bottom five in the country. I think that's just the better play overall. Although, again, Shador should be able to have himself a nice game against Kansas there as well. So
to me, it feels more a question of if you want higher upside, I think Hauser's the pick. If you're wanting to play it a little bit safer, I think Sanders would be the pick. That's how I see it, at least.
No, for sure. When it comes to projections, though, my projections agree on my front. They have Caden Hauser at 34.4 fantasy points. Shador Sanders about 8 points behind, about 26.8. So it's still a solid day for Shador Sanders, pretty much right in line with what we've been getting out of him. And then my projections have Huff down at 19.5 fantasy points, which is, again, really showing of that passing defense right there, kind of impacting him there. C2C's projections actually, or I say actually as if this is a surprise, they also have Hauser at as the lead pick here at 32.05 fantasy points. They actually have Shador Sanders as the least likely, or the least scoring of, how do I even say this? The lowest score of these three at 22.68, and they have Huff up there at 24.63. So my projections and C2C's projections agree with me. Justin's the one going off the beaten path here and picking Shador Sanders, but Justin's been right more than he's been wrong, so I'm not going to comment too much for that.
I don't know, yeah.
So, all right, let us put our, oops, press Control Z on the wrong thing there. There we go. All right, let's move on to our fourth question here. This one comes to us from Michael TP. I think I pronounced that last name correctly, at MTP on Twitter here. And he is asking us to start two of these running backs here between Desmond Reed at Louisville, Rasul Faison out of Utah State going up against San Diego State this weekend, or we can go with Kyle Manungai, the running back out of Rutgers, going up against Illinois. This is a half point PPR league. So Justin, which two will you be starting?
Yeah, so I mean these are three good options to have to pick from. So certainly a tough question. You know, Desmond Reed for me is I think I just always, you know, I don't know that he's had a bad game this year, and that kind of makes it like his bad games are sort of like 12 or 13 points rather than 20 plus points, which I do value, especially sort of, you know, in these must win weeks where, you know, you're trying to, you know, you do want the upside, but you're also trying to sort of control the floor a little bit. And so, and Desmond Reed, the reason I think he's been so good is he's basically matchup proof because he's, you know, they can use him on the ground, they can use him in the air. And this is a 0.5 PPR league. So, you know, there is some utility there to getting the running back who gets more targets in the game, in terms of starting your running backs. So I think Reed would be one of the picks that I would start. You know, of the other two, again, I'm happy to start either of these players, but, you know, you have to pick one of them. You know, Faison had a nice bounce back performance last week after sort of puzzlingly missing the game 2 weeks ago. Manungai was, there was no mystery to it, but he was injured a few weeks ago, missed one game, then came back last week, had himself a pretty good performance. Rutgers has kind of discovered some other elements in their offense, though, you know, notably hasn't really taken away from Manungai. You know, they seem to have coexisted quite nicely last weekend in particular. Though to be fair, Illinois probably is stingier defense than, I believe it was Maryland who they were playing. It was Maryland that they were playing last weekend. So that might put a damper on things in terms of total scoring. And then, you know, with San Diego State, again, I think defensively, if I remember correctly, I'm just going to check the show sheet real quick before I say something yet. Defensively, especially against the run, they're not great. And so I might just use that as a deciding factor here. You know, there's not too much to separate these last two players for me. And really all three are fantastic. I think I'll roll with Faison because this is quite a weak sort of SDSU run defense. At least that's what the numbers are saying. I think Illinois, you know, they're 7-3, right? They're actually ranked now in the playoff top 25. You know, defensively, I think they're going to be a little bit more of a challenge for Rutgers versus, say, Utah State versus San Diego State. So that's kind of what I'm going to use to to sort of distinguish between the players there, but I wouldn't be sad to start any three of these players, to be fair.
I am going to keep mine decently simple here. And I'm just going to go with the two guys because all three of these guys are volume pigs. Insert shameless plug for you here.
Appreciate that.
All three of these guys are bona fide volume pigs, right? They're going to get theirs. The volume's not something I'm worried about. They get their touchdowns, all three of them, right? I'm going to just base this on defensive matchup here. And if that is the case, I'm going to go with Faison. I'm going to go with Manungai here. To kind of counter your point a little bit, Justin, again, I just looked up Maryland. Maryland's defense, yeah, they're 76th in the country, but they're 39th or 38th versus the run and 99th versus the pass. So their weakness was actually the pass game. And that didn't stop Manungai hardly at all. I mean, well, it kind of did because Manungai only had he had a little less than 4 yards per carry. So it wasn't exactly his most explosive day on the ground there. That's kind of where Maryland's defense kind of comes into it. It's just he had 25 attempts on the day. But he gets Illinois this weekend. They're 103rd in the country in team performance defending the run here. That's kind of their one big weakness on defense. So I think Manungai should be able, especially another week getting healthy here for Manungai. I think he should be able to take care of that pretty decently. I'm a little scared at this over under 47 and a half, so something to be concerned about there. But compare Faison, who's going up against the 112th team in the country versus the run. And then Reed. At the end of the day, he's going up against Louisville, who's 44th versus the run. Not elite, but definitely better significantly than San Diego State or Illinois versus the run. And you might be saying to me, well, Jared, Reed catches a bunch of passes. What's Louisville's defense look like versus the pass? Well, if you just watched the Stanford game, you would think Louisville has the worst secondary in the world. But no. Louisville's secondary here is 61st versus the pass, so a little like slightly better than average. I think all three of these guys have good weekend or good days this weekend. I don't think there's a bad start among these three. The only thing I will say is that if again, you're literally putting a gun into my head here, I would sit Reed. If it was a full point PPR league, probably would start Reed and maybe have to decide between Manungai and Faison there. But for now, just give me the better defensive matchups with Manungai going up against Illinois and Faison going up against San Diego State there. In terms of what the projections have for this, our C2C projections have, they agree with Justin, where Reed is the highest among these three, or excuse me, Faison is the highest among these three at 19.87 fantasy points. They have Reed at 18.29. My projections are very bullish on Kyle Manungai this weekend. My projections have him up at 25.3 fantasy points for this weekend. And then they have Reed as the second best option at 20.2, but that's slightly ahead of Rasul Faison at 19.8 fantasy points. So like I said, like I don't think there's a bad start among these three guys. Right? If anything, I would double check your receivers and your flex just to make sure that, you can't trade one of these guys out to just be a safer option in your flex spot there. So, any last thoughts on this question, Justin?
No, it's a good question. Again, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. All three are good options, and we're splitting hairs here, I think.
So, all right. Let me put these back. And then we have two more questions. So let's hit up Mr. William here at William underscore 1712, one of our regular YouTube commenters. He's asking us to start a running back. He did not give me any scoring rules here, but he wants one running back between Amari Daniels, the running back out of Texas A&M, going up against Auburn this weekend. Or we could go with Quinshon Judkins, the running back out of Ohio State, going up against Indiana. Or we can go with LJ Martin, the running back out of BYU, going up against Arizona State. So first and foremost, I'm sitting Amari Daniels. I threw him out as a waiver option a couple of weeks ago after Le'Veon Moss went down because there's a possibility of with there being literally nobody else in that backfield that just by default, Daniels becomes a RB1 for Texas A&M. I still think that is possible. But the problem is we haven't seen it yet. we don't have anything tangible to really throw on that. He had 5 carries this past week against New Mexico State. Granted, that was 5 carries for 84 yards. But even still, right, we didn't get to see a true volume pick-esque performance there from Daniels, which is what you're going to need if Daniels is going up against this Auburn defense, who's 11th in the country against the run. Again, Auburn's not great offensively. That defense is still quite legit from them. So you would need Daniels to have that volume. That's just not a risk I think you can take here in the playoffs, right? You have to start guys that you've just seen it from before, right? Don't get too cute here. Don't roll the dice on something like this. So that leaves Judkins and that leaves LJ Martin. Vegas-wise, you're looking at probably a decent day for Judkins here, right? Ohio State's favored by 14 points here. The over-under in this game is 51.5, which isn't like, you know, astronomically high. It's not astronomically low either, right? So you're probably expecting Ohio State to probably have 4 touchdowns in this game. The problem with Judkins is the same problem that we always get from Ohio State recently, and that is the fact that they're not quite the offensive juggernaut they used to be. Don't get me wrong, it's still pretty good offense. But it used to be that you could start the RB1 for Ohio State, and you knew you were getting at least 1 touchdown that day because they just scored so many touchdowns. You could start the top receiver for Ohio State, and you knew you were going to get a touchdown or two that day. They don't score enough touchdowns for you to really rely on that anymore, and it's made even worse by the fact that Judkins is one of 2 top running backs in this backfield, right? This is the issue they've had all year long, right? He'll have a day like he did against Penn State where it's 14 carries, 95 yards, doesn't get a touchdown. Then he follows it up against Purdue, 11 carries, 32 yards, nothing. And then the next week against Northwestern, they finally decide to give him some love, 15 carries, 76 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I have zero clue what kind of day Judkins is going to have, especially against this Indiana defense, which currently rates as top 5 in the country versus the run. Given who they've played, I don't know how much I believe that. But even still, right? Like that's a big dice to roll. Versus our last guy here with LJ Martin at BYU. I caught him during the offseason, but I think of these 3 guys, he's definitely the most consistent play out of these 3 guys, even if he's not really scoring the touchdowns that you really want to see. Over his last 3 games, he scored 1 touchdown, but over his last 3 games, he's averaged over 5 yards per rush in every single game, right? You're looking at production totals of, you know, 76, 68, 101. If you can get just some good touchdown luck, which based on what I'm seeing, LJ Martin's owed a touchdown or 2 this game, I think he's the one that you can most reliably start this upcoming weekend. Because again, you look at Arizona State's defense, solid. They're 52nd versus the run, just above average. I think that there should be more than enough opportunities for Martin to produce in this game, and I think he's the safest play of these 3, so he's going to be the one who I go with. So Justin, which of these 3 are you going to be starting?
Yeah, well, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think on this question, you know, I think Amari Daniels is the easy sit just based on his role in the offense and what we know about what we can expect with him in terms of touches and whatnot, and that Auburn matchup isn't really all that great either. Judkins, I think of these 3, has like the highest ceiling, highest potential potentially.
There's a world where Judkins scores 3 touchdowns this weekend.
Yeah, like if things just break a certain way where he just happens to get the goal line, like they're in the red zone and he gets a bunch of goal line touches, or he breaks a long touchdown, you know, it could definitely sort of go that way, but don't know that that's really something I'd want to bet on in a playoff game. You know, I'm pretty adverse to ever starting a player who I know is in the committee at running back. And then so by sort of principle, it'd be hard for me to choose Judkins. LJ is sort of the easy one. Not, I don't want to say this is an easy selection, but sort of, you know, when sort of looking at each player, I'd say LJ is kind of the one where, okay, I can sort of expect a certain level of touches. You know, the matchup isn't fantastic statistically, but, you know, if we're looking at all 3 of these opponents, Arizona State certainly is sort of the best matchup, you know, from a CFF perspective. Not that they're an amazing matchup, but at least from the statistical standpoint, they're better than Auburn and Indiana. Now, again, you know, that's not the be-all end-all, but that certainly is a data point that we can consider. Yeah, I don't know that I expect any of these players. Like, I wouldn't want to have to rely on, like, if I needed 25 or 30 points, maybe I'd take a swing on Quinshon Judkins on the off chance. But, I think in most sort of scenarios, I think I would start LJ Martin of these three.
Alrighty. I got nothing else to add to that, so let's hit up our final question here, coming to us from Tyler Cox at Tyler underscore Fox 5 on Twitter here. He's got what looks to be a bit of a deeper league here, I must say. Full point PPR, start one in the flex spot here. We got Chris Carpenter, the wide receiver out of UTSA, going up against Temple this weekend. You got Catron Allen, running back out of Penn State, going up against Minnesota. Or we have Theo Weiss, the wide receiver out of Missouri, going up against Mississippi State. So, Justin, it is your turn to start the question. Which one player are you going with here?
Okay, well, the first one, in terms of who I want to sit, or at least the first player I'm going to sit, I think Catron Allen is the one that sort of stands out. You're talking about a projected low scoring game against Minnesota. Minnesota is pretty stingy against the run. And similar to Quinshon Judkins' last question, we know he's in the committee as well. And this one is even more, like, it's even more so, it feels like he's 1B rather than 1A. So, I don't know that I'd want to start Allen this weekend, although, as you mentioned, Jared, this seems like it might be a deeper league. So, that's certainly a consideration. As far as the other two, I actually like the idea of Theo Weiss this weekend. Mississippi State defensively is, at least from the statistics, is not that great. This could be a game where, I believe the over-under is set, 57 and a half. So this is a game where, and Mizzou is favored by 7.5. So this is a game where Missouri is expected to score. Now, granted, there's other options there for Missouri. Obviously, Luther Burden is there as well, and Brady Cook has kind of been up and down with his health all season. But Theo Weiss is basically their sort of definitive number two receiver. In some games, he out targets Burden as well. So I actually like the idea, I think, of Weiss this weekend. That Chris Carpenter, it's not a bad idea. Certainly, that's a great matchup as well against Temple. Although, they're, at least from the statistics, seem to be better against the pass versus the run. So that might affect things. But UTSA is favored by multiple touchdowns in that game, in the over-under set at 55 and a half. So that's another great matchup. I just don't know if Carpenter's sort of, even though he might be sort of the primary option there, I don't know if he gets the same level of consistent volume as Weiss. I mean, even though Weiss is wide receiver too, he actually gets quite a steady amount of targets per game, which I do like. And if he happens to score, then he generally will have a good day. So I would probably take a chance with Weiss here, of these three players.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go with Weiss as well. I agree with you that Catron Allen is the first one I sat among these guys. Again, you are talking about a full PPR league here, so that's automatically going to kind of hurt any running back in these discussions, right? Now, granted, Allen does catch a decent amount of balls out of the backfield. Like, he literally just this past week against Purdue, he caught four balls. So that was huge when it came to his performance last week. But like you say, given the matchup here, given the expected low scoring game, Singleton's probably going to be back to full health for this game. That's a big dice roll here in the playoffs. Granted, all three of these guys are somewhat dice rolls, given, again, it seems like it's a bit of a deeper league here. Chris Carpenter is such a hard guy for me to figure out right now, because the 2 weeks before, right, 8 targets, 108 yards, 9 targets, 115 yards, it really looked like that we were seeing the emergence of a new top wide receiver for UTSA. Whether you start him or not this week is you, whether or not you believe this past week against North Texas was a fluke. He only had 4 targets, 1 catch, 9 yards, right? Problem is, UTSA all year long has kind of been a team with a flavor of the week at wide receiver, right? Maybe you get a guy 2 weeks in a row, but it feels like they kind of move around to different guys. Like last week, David Amador was everywhere for UTSA, right? And I wouldn't be surprised if he's involved heavily again this week, right? Versus Chris Carpenter did well the 2 weeks beforehand, but he had himself a slow stretch earlier this season. So definitely a little bit of concern there. I think I'm, again, this is why I'm going to go with Theo Weiss here, because I think you just go with the matchup here. Mizzou's only really thrown to two major guys right now between Weiss and Burden, right? Like you said, the volume is pretty solid for a wide receiver two here. They get Mississippi State, who not only is bad defensively, their passing defense is bottom four in the country. So I think that's a decent bet to put on in order to expect Theo Weiss to just find the end zone at some point for Mizzou. So in terms of projections, our C2C projections actually don't have projections for Chris Carpenter. And they actually have Keyshawn Allen as the highest projected total between these three guys. They have Allen at 16.61. They have Theo Weiss at 10.48. My personal projections agree with us, Justin. They have Chris Carpenter at 7.4, very much took a hit after this past week. Keyshawn Allen at 9.5. And then Theo Weiss is up here at a whopping 14.8, which is not, great again, but again, we're in a pretty deeper league, it feels like here. So
Yeah.
14.8, I think, is all you can really ask for when it comes to projecting Theo Weiss. So I'm with you, Justin. I like Theo Weiss of these three options. So with that being said, Justin, as we get kind of closer to the end of the season here, man, what do people got to look forward to with volume picks? What are you, obviously you're doing your in-season content right now, but anything you want to tease yet?
No, I mean, I would say if people haven't checked out our Dynasty pod with Nate last week, definitely check that one out. That was a lot of fun. I'm going to be probably taking a bit of a break in December. Like you, Jared, it's, this is tiring work. Not that I'm looking forward to things ending, but looking forward to a break at the end of this. And then we'll fire things back up probably at full force in January 2025. So, I do a little bit of rankings in season content for running back and quarterback, and you can find that stuff at volumepigs.com if that's of interest. Yeah, looking forward to chatting CFF again next week.
Absolutely, man. And again, like Justin said, go check out our latest Defending the Natty episode. You can find that on the exclusively on the Chasing the Natty podcast feed. It is a monthly podcast between Nate and myself, or Nate Marquise and myself. We discuss CFF Dynasty talks on there. We invited Justin on for this past week to really just have some fun and just throw out some Dynasty hot takes, react to them. It was a ton of fun. So make sure you go check that out as well. If you are in need of help when it comes to, trying to figure out how to navigate these playoff runs, one, I would highly suggest our projections over at C2C. We do weekly rankings over there. You can get the point totals there. You can also find my rest of season rankings. If you're just looking for guys that'll be helpful both weeks 13 and 14, I'd highly recommend you go and check out those projection rankings over there as well. You can find those by just looking at the campus rankings on our C2C website and then clicking on the little button that says ROS for rest of season. So, that being said, that's pretty much all the announcements I have here. We've come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. Like I said, if you guys have not already, make sure you check out the rest of the Campus Canton podcast feed for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. Make sure if you're listening on YouTube, make sure you like, comment, subscribe. If you're on the podcast, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. We'll be back here next Wednesday for when you guys are listening for our final sit start show of the season. We'll have a ton of fun with that. Hopefully, every single one of you are there asking questions to us for your championship runs. Until then, really appreciate you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.